Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Sparty Talk. I'm Satchmo, joined as always by the thin man, DB. DB, you ready to go for it on fourth down?
Ready to go. Greetings, Spartan Nation.
All right. We have a fun show planned this week. We'll start with Michigan State's big win over Wisconsin. Then we'll look ahead to the Michigan game, talk a little Big Ten football, and a little top 25 college football, even throw in some college hockey talk. That's right. It's time to start talking college hockey as well. And time permitting, we'll hit the notorious other stuff. But we've got to begin with a remarkable game Saturday afternoon where Michigan State beat Wisconsin 34-24 in East Lansing, part of a nice early season schedule for Michigan State where they haven't had to leave the state of Michigan yet. DD, you were watching the game along with me on TV. Well, I wouldn't say along with me. In another location, you're in the D.C. area, I'm in the Boston area, but you're out there watching the game on TV. What did you think of the performance?
Well, Satchmo, I thought that it was in many ways remarkable. I didn't expect Michigan State to win this game, and yet they came out and proved me wrong. I thought Wisconsin would just be too much for them, and all the way around, you know, it wasn't perfect, but a win is a win, as they say, Satchmo.
Yeah, it was an interesting game. I mean, the two concerns about Wisconsin coming into the game would be their offensive line and their defensive line would be too much for Michigan State to handle. And the Michigan State offense did a pretty remarkable job dealing with the Wisconsin defensive line. They were able to run the ball. And that's very difficult to do. Wisconsin's an excellent run defense. I'm looking at the stats right now. I mean, Michigan State ran the ball 45 times. I mean, just unbelievable. And they averaged four yards a rush, I mean, for 175 yards. It's not often that Wisconsin's going to give up 175 yards on the ground. Then on the other side of the ball, in terms of the Wisconsin offensive line, I thought the Michigan State defense did a really good job of plugging up the run. They did a very nice job on Clay. It hurt that Clay hurt his ankles. And to me, I thought Brett Bielema made a surprising coaching error and a bad coaching decision. He didn't go to his other running backs, particularly James White, throughout the game. White was given Michigan State all sorts of problems with his speed, and he elected to go with the power runner in Clay, and given the fact that Wisconsin didn't have many weapons on the outside, Toon didn't look like himself, and they did a good job of Kendricks. It was a pretty vanilla offense that Michigan State was able to get their defense around and stop. Were you surprised? I mean, especially given how effective White was, that Bielema didn't go to him more often?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, James White, when he was in the game, was kind of electric, especially in the second half. And I think he started off in the second half for Wisconsin, was in there a little bit more, sparked him on that touchdown drive early in the second half. But, I was surprised, too, about that, Satchmo. And I also would point out, too, that Wisconsin's receivers, who are normally pretty good, looked like they were off their game a little bit. There was a lot of drops on their side of the ball, Satchmo.
Well, there were a lot of drops on their side of the ball, but time to give Rucker some credit. He was all over Toon. I mean, wherever Toon was, Rucker was just draped all over him. And so it wasn't easy for Tolzien, who's a very good quarterback, to find him open. And then they also did an interesting job just in terms of guarding the tight end, who's just a fantastic tight end for Wisconsin. Whose name escapes me at the moment, and I don't know why, because I just said it, Kendricks. Lance Kendricks, very good tight end. And they had a safety and a linebacker bracketing them on the entire time, and sometimes they helped out with a corner. It was almost like they had three defenders on Kendrick at all times. It was rather remarkable. The one guy they weren't going to let him beat in the air was Kendricks, and they set their mind to stop to it, and they did, and they did a good job stopping the run as well. I mean, overall, I mean, it did look like, I mean, to be – to Wisconsin's credit, when White was running the ball, it looked like they could get White wherever they wanted to. I mean, 10 carries for 98 yards? Wow. I mean, Clay had 17 carries for 80 yards. I'm still not sure why they didn't go to White more often. But it was also an interesting performance on the Michigan State offensive side of the ball, because the Michigan State defense did play well. But Michigan State's offense overcame three turnovers, two interceptions by Cousins, and a fumble by Keith Nichol to put up more than 30 points. I mean, they scored 34 points. One of the interceptions was a red zone pick by Cousins that had some MSU fans, and by say some, I mean your friends, because my friends aren't that crazy, calling for Cousins to be benched again. What did you think of the picks first? I'll go into what I thought of the picks, but what did you think of the picks first?
Well, I thought that the first one he threw, actually both of them were pretty poor judgment on his part, although I think the one might have been tipped, the second one. The first one, I thought he really didn't have any business throwing in traffic. But having said that, to address this point you just made about, you know, crazy Spartan fans saying that Cousins should be benched. The question I have for those fans that say that about Cousins, who, by the way, had 269 yards, three touchdowns, in case you didn't point that out, and a mostly pretty solid game despite those errors, and he played much better in the second half. I say, okay, you're going to bench Cousins, fine. Who are you going to put in there? I mean, Keith Nichol is – I don't think we're going back to Keith Nichol quarterback anytime soon. And then Andrew Maxwell, so raw and green. We haven't seen enough of him yet to know. But there's Spartan fans out there, Satchmo, who think that Andrew Maxwell is the second coming of Brett Favre. And I got to tell you, we haven't seen him yet. Have you seen Andrew Maxwell play somewhere, Satchmo?
Yeah, well, I'm not even going to address the Andrew Maxwell issue because that's just a joke. He's a redshirt freshman. But I'm going to offer a full-throated defense of Cousins. And let us start with the turnovers. He only had, in my mind, one bad turnover this game. This was a red zone interception. And it was a turnover made because he was trying to make a play. He should have thrown the ball away. Instead, he tried to force it in there and make it. But he didn't even force it in there when he dropped back and looked. He dropped back, looked, didn't find anyone, knew he wasn't finding anyone, rolled out towards the sideline, and he forced it. All right? No excuse for it. Bad mistake. It was a mistake being made out of being too aggressive. You could sort of live with those mistakes. The second pick went back to pass, unleashed a pass. The Wisconsin defensive line. Michigan State did a good job running the ball, but the Wisconsin defensive line did a good job getting penetration the entire game. And they got penetration. They were upfield. They jumped in the air, tipped the ball, and it turned into an interception. I'm not going to blame Cousins on that one. That could have happened to any quarterback at any time. Whenever defensive line gets penetration, and the guy was being blocked, but he was 3 or 4 yards in the backfield, jumped up, tipped the ball. It happens. You can't blame Cousins for that. The third turnover, I know people want to blame it on Cousins, but it wasn't his fault. He threw the ball. Nichol caught it. He turned upfield to run with the ball. Got hit. He should have gone down, but he decided to fight for some extra yardage. And when he fought for the extra yardage, he lost the ball. Three turnovers of which I would categorize, two turnovers for Cousins, of which I would categorize only one as a bad turnover, and an extra effort turnover from Nichol. Do you want the turnovers? No. Turnovers are ultimately going to kill you. But they got bailed out by Keyshawn Martin, punt return for a touchdown, and all is better with the world. Now, never mind your turnovers. Did anyone look at the throws he was actually completing? Those were NFL-caliber throws. He was fitting in balls in tight windows. Balls. He was placing, leading his receivers, waiting for his receivers to break open. He was looking off the safeties and coming back to the receivers. These are throws that an NFL quarterback makes. These aren't throws that most quarterbacks in college football can make. Very few college quarterbacks can make these throws. And Maxwell sure can, but Cousins can. I mean, that was a heck of a game, my cousin. He went 9-for-11 on third down conversion, third down passing. How about that? I mean, this was a team that was struggling to convert on third downs. Cousins came through in the clutch, and you want to know what? When the game was on the line, they needed a touchdown to seal the game. It was Cousins throwing the ball that did it. Yeah, there was a little running thrown in, but it was Cousins throwing the ball that sealed the deal. So all you Spartan fans are on Cousins' case. Get off his back.
It's just pathetic. I also thought it was interesting. Go ahead, DB.
No, I was just going to throw back in there, too, to in terms of Cousins, the thing I like about him the best is that he knows how to manage a game. He really is developing that skill even more than last year. You can see, I think he's very headstrong, and I think that that's really important.
Yeah, I mean, he is headstrong, but more importantly, you're right, he's learning to manage a game. He's learning to check down on his plays. I mean, he's getting into runs when running situations call for it. When they got passing plays called, he's getting in the runs, and when they got running defenses up there, he's getting the passing plays, and he's making the right decisions. I thought it was a really interesting game plan by Michigan State. I mean, they made a concerted effort to run the ball. And how about Larry Caper at the end of the game getting the job done?
Larry Caper is the closer, Satchmo.
Well, it's interesting. Caper, it looks like Michigan State's going to be using Caper as a third down back and as a two-minute drill back because he's an excellent blocker, but more importantly, he's an excellent receiver. They can split him out wide in an empty backfield. They can throw him the screen pass, which they did. He's excellent picking up blitzes, and they can run the little draw plays for him, and he's an effective runner, and he did all of those things in the final two-minute drive. And it's been a while. I mean, it's been a while since Michigan State had two good running backs in the backfield at the same time, let alone three. I mean, DB, we have to go back to what? Craig Thomas and Tico Duckett for two in the backfield at the same time?
Yeah, or you could come forward a little bit. We had some minor success with Mark Renaud and Cedric Irvin at one point in the 90s. But, yeah, it's been a while.
Yeah, but Renaud and Cedric Irvin aren't on the level of this trio.
Oh,
I mean,
no.
Corbin Irvin
not
was fantastic.
I'm not suggesting that. No. No, I'm just saying the last time we've had so many weapons in the backfield was maybe that long ago.
Yeah, but I'm thinking good ones.
Well,
Craig Thomas left a fumble against Central Michigan. That was a problem. I acknowledge that.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, when we had three at one time, yeah, you go back to the early 90s, like you said, yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, it's nice that we no longer have to worry about Batman Holman carrying the ball.
And Satchmo, I wanted to chime in there on the nickel turnover.
Yeah.
I wasn't as disappointed in nickel's turnover as the game went on. I thought about that play a little bit. First of all, I don't blame him at all for trying to fight for extra yardage. That's what you're supposed to do. You could maybe argue that he didn't hold on to the ball tight enough, but if you watch the replay of that turnover, give a lot of credit to that Wisconsin defender. He was kind of really, it was really strength right there. He was just kind of, he was smart to try to punch that ball away from Nickel, when that play happened. So I can't completely blame Nickel in that situation. I mean, there's probably a way that Nickel could have handled that play better, but that was power versus power right there, I would say, Satchmo.
Yeah, it was power versus power, and I mean, you got to give Nickel credit. He played a pretty good game on wide receiver, and I was most impressed with his varied Kersler depth for fumbling the ball. the lip reader in me enjoyed that.
not for the PG-rated or G-rated crowd.
No, not for the PG-rated or G-rated crowd. Now, this game was punctuated once again by what Bill Raftery would like to call onions. and Coach Treadwell showed he had some. Went for it on fourth down three times and went two for three on the fourth down. So first fourth down was – first of all, I have to say this. I don't know whether you agree with me, DB, or not, but did you agree with all three decisions to go for it on fourth down?
Believe it or not, Satchmo, Yes, I did. As crazy as it seems, although I almost was not agreeing with the last time they did it when they had the what turned out to sort of seal the game, because I was afraid, you know, Wisconsin has such a tough defensive line, but gives so much credit to Michigan State, especially the offensive line, and Kirk Cousins in that situation. He threw up a nice little feather pass there, and the Wisconsin defense just didn't adjust to that very well. So it ultimately, no, at least not in the first few, but I think the last time was a little shaky, but I think, you know, I think it, it worked out in the end.
All right, so the first fourth down was a fourth and one near midfield at the end of the first half. And I got to give Treadwell credit for this. What a play call. One of those little reverse pitches that Michigan State likes to run. They had it run the entire game. Wisconsin was loaded for bear to stop an inside run or even a quarterback sneak. It was that close. And they got a nice little pickup on that play. It was a Le'Veon Bell going around the left side. Made a Wisconsin defender miss to pick up some extra yardage would let to a Michigan State score at the end of the first half. So that was very nicely done. Then the second fourth down, and I agreed with all three calls, Michigan State was stopped on an inside running play, fourth and goal at the one. And the Michigan State defense, to its credit, forced Wisconsin to go on a three and out. And Michigan State was able to march right back down the field and score. And then the last play, and this was, to me, this was the really impressive one, they went for it again with a chance to seal the game. And you're right, that was a nice little touch pass from Cousins. It was another gutsy call because they went play action, and they only had one receiver running a route. If Cunningham doesn't get open, there's no one else to throw the ball to. And Cunningham faked like he was going to block, and because he faked the block, the Wisconsin receivers bought the play action, and he was able to slip behind them for the touchdown. I mean, I thought it was another remarkable play call and well done on that aspect. So I was impressed with it. I like the fact that they had the confidence to do it too. I mean, because when you go for it on fourth down, you're not only showing confidence in your offense, you're showing confidence in your defense's ability to shut them down afterwards. And I mean that takes some courage to show that, and it was good to see. Now, my question for you, DB, if Mark D'Antonio is on the sideline and, you know, he was in the hospital, he had a blood clot in his leg, so he's watching the game from the hospital. It was a complication from his recovery from his heart attack, and, you know, apparently these clots are common in recovery from heart attacks, so we wish Coach D'Antonio well. But if Mark D'Antonio is on the sideline, do you think he goes for it three times on fourth down like that?
I'm going to actually say yes. I think he trusts his coaching staff and he trusts Don Treadwell and trusts the team, and I think he does, although I could see, believe it or not, I don't think that he would not go for it on the because we've seen Mark D'Antonio as a little bit of a gambler, which is good. He's not too conservative. I actually think where he might not have gone for it is that first one, that first fourth down play. I think he may have let the clock run a little bit and tried to draw Wisconsin offside and then maybe called a timeout or punted. That one I could see maybe he would have pulled back on because it was early in the game and Wisconsin, you know, you don't want to give their offense any chances. So that one he might have pulled back on, but I think the goal line one, I think he's going for it all the way.
All right. Now, my second question to you about all this going for it and fourth down and all that sort of stuff, has Don Treadwell coached himself out of Michigan State as a result of the job he's done and going for it and fourth down and the way he's handled himself with the press and the media and all this sort of stuff? Is Michigan State going to be losing Treadwell to another program at the end of the year?
Wow, well, that's an interesting question. That thought raced through my mind when the game was going on. I like Treadwell from the standpoint that he really has sort of a calm demeanor about him on the sideline. He's very much like Mark D'Antonio. in that respect. And I understand in the past, I believe he may have interviewed or had an opportunity maybe to go to Boston College. I don't know if that was at Cincinnati or at Michigan State. I think there's going to be people who are going to inquire about him, and they should at the end of the year. But, you know, I like him. He's an excellent offensive coordinator. He's doing a great job standing in for Coach D'Antonio for the time being. And, you know, hey, he's starting to remind me of Steve Spurrier a little bit here, Satchmo. I'm predicting the Spartans will do an onside kick at the beginning of the game against Michigan this week.
Onside kick at the beginning of the game. I love it. I absolutely love it. Well, I mean, it is interesting because special teams was supposed to be a question mark coming into the season, especially with Swenson going, Swenson leaving the program or the place kicker, and you had a couple of new players trying out for the field goal kicker, and we really haven't seen a great return game at Michigan State for a while. And the last player who, when he went back for either a punt return for or a kick return, he thought, wow, this has a chance of going the distance, was DeAndre Cobb.
Oh, DeAndre Cobb was so fast, yeah.
Oh, he was absolutely electric. And so that was the last time. But, I mean, Keyshawn Martin, every time he goes back to field a kick now, you wonder what's going to happen. And so that's interesting. And then Conroy's really settled down as a pretty good field goal kicker.
Yes, good point. Excellent point.
Yeah, so special teams is becoming less of a question mark.
Yeah, agreed.
And speaking of DeAndre Cobb, I thought the other interesting thing about the Michigan State running backs is DeAndre Cobb was the last time Michigan State had a running back where you handed it off to him and you said, wow, he could go the distance. Now, that required, you know, Cobb to get out in the open field and space and all that sort of stuff. But between Baker, Bell, and Caper, Michigan State has three running backs with the combination of power and speed that any time they touch the ball, it could turn into a touchdown.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. And, you know, another one like that, too, maybe even more so than Martin, but definitely on par with Cobb. Derek Mason back in the day had some huge punt return and kick return touchdowns when he was with the Spartans.
Yeah, actually, Michigan State had a pretty good string of kick return or punt returners for a while. Courtney Hawkins was a very good punt returner. Derek Mason was a very good one. And then they went through a bit of a dry spell until they hit DeAndre Cobb, and now they've got Keyshawn Martin fulfilling that role again. And for some of you Spartans wondering who else used to return Michigan State kicks, one player that comes to mind, Mill the Thrill Coleman.
Yeah.
Farmington Hills Harrison,
wow.
Quarterback. Set all sorts of high school records. Went to Michigan State, played a little quarterback, but played mostly wide receiver and punt returner.
Wow, and Mill
no
the
more.
Thrill.
What's that?
Mill the Thrill, yeah.
Yeah. All right. You could tell. No more walking down memory lane for us.
Hey, Sandra, we didn't talk about the defense as much here.
Well, what do you think of the defense? I mean, this is the second week in a row no one's calling for Narduzzi's head.
Well, there are still some crazy people in my life, Satchmo, who are doing that, even still. I guess they thought we should have shut out Northern Colorado. I don't know, but... excellent job. I mean, they held John Clay under 100 yards for the first time in 10 games. The front is coming together. I don't know if the DBs are turning their heads, but they're doing a pretty good job. I mean, I pointed out one point that one of Tolzien's passes hit Rucker in the tush. So things are happening.
But here's the thing. I actually think the Wisconsin offense, you know how in basketball you match up well against some teams and don't match up well against others?
Yeah.
I think it was the same thing here. I think this was a team that, from a defensive standpoint, Michigan State matched up really well against. It was a team that wanted to run the ball. And Michigan State's front seven can handle, and not only did they want to run the ball, they didn't want to run the ball outside. They wanted to run the ball in between the tackles. That's the type of defense that Michigan State, that's the type of offense that Michigan State defense matches up well against. A power running attack in between the tackles, they're going to try and man up and just beat you. And Michigan State, the Michigan State defense is really well-suited, the personnel is well-suited to handle that sort of attack. And then when you consider the receivers that they were running into, there wasn't a whole lot of speed. Were these good receivers? Yes. But were they great receivers? No. So there wasn't that big deep ball threat on the outside that Michigan State had to worry about. They could man up on the corners without worrying about being beaten deep and then commit the rest of the players to stop the run and guard the tight end. And that's what they did. This was actually, to me, a really good matchup for the Michigan State defense. So in addition to just playing well, it was a good matchup, and they didn't have to get outside of their comfort zone. And I think that was a big part of why, the Michigan State defense did well, and good for them. It was fun to see them make a stand. And there were really, when you think about it, three really key defensive stands. One is after the nickel fumble. They held Wisconsin, the fumbles in Michigan State had territory. They held Wisconsin to a field goal. The second was what we talked about before. After going for it on fourth and goal, they forced Wisconsin to go three and out. And then later in that quarter, it looked like Wisconsin was marching, and they were able to get the ball back and get it back to Cousins and company, go in for the go-ahead touch or the ceiling touchdown. The touchdown that sealed the game. So overall, yeah, I think it was a pretty good effort by them, and I was impressed, and I'm happy for Narduzzi. I like defensive efforts like that. They were hitting hard, and they were playing hard, and it was good to see. And it's going to be interesting to see, because I think Notre Dame defensively is a bit like that too, in that against traditional offenses, they fare much better, but against a spread offense, they struggle. And it's going to be interesting to see, and it segues into our next topic, the Michigan-Michigan State game. The first time both teams are undefeated since 1999. It's the first time both teams have been ranked in 7 or 8 years. This is going to be a fun game in Ann Arbor, DB. And how do you see our defense holding up against Michigan's offense and Denard Robinson was getting over 200 yards running and passing every game?
Well, this is going to be like, if I could use the Tom Izzo school here of playing defense, you know there's going to be a guy on the other team, in this case it's Denard Robinson, who's going to get some yards and going to get some points. You know that Michigan's at least going to get in the 20s in this game, if not more, depending on how good the offense is for Michigan State and the defense. So you know that's going to happen. But, as I said last night, right after Michigan State won, I texted you and I said, you know, I bet Greg Jones is, you know, Mr. Denard Robinson week here. He's going to be studying every little move and everything. The guy is shifty. He's quick. He's fast. He's strong. Showed a little bit of arm yesterday. So Michigan State's defense will have their hands full. But having said that, I think that, this defense, their rushing defense isn't too bad. There's going to be some points scored, but, maybe they can hold them in check.
Yeah, I think there's going to be a lot of points scored. If you happen to be in Vegas, and, you know, we're not endorsing gambling, but if you happen to be in Vegas and you happen to be in a sports book, you know, let's just say you're wandering into the Wynn sports book. And you spot a friend of mine, Johnny Avello, runs the sports book at the Wynn. He's the sports book manager at the Wynn. That's his operation. And you say, hey, Johnny, what's the over-under on the Michigan-Michigan State game? And he tells you if the over-under is in the 50s. Gentlemen, ladies, whoever might be listening, take the over. Johnny Avello's not going to likely telling you this because it's going to cost him money. But take the over. Both teams are going to put up at least 30 points.
Because here's what's going to happen. Michigan's going to spread you out wide. I mean, it's going to be spread. They're going to spread you out wide. It'll be like walking into a Nevada brothel and sampling the merchandise. And they're going to spread you out wide, and then they're going to try and get their athletes, and most importantly, Denard Robinson, into open space. And we saw what happened when White for Wisconsin was able to string out wide and use his speed to get to the outside. And we've seen what's happened when Michigan State's been had to deal with talented, skilled people trying to tackle them and mobile quarterbacks trying to contain them when their defenders are all spread out wide and they can't get three and four and five guys to the ball. Michigan State's defense struggles. And let's face it, Darrell Robinson's had an excellent year. And it's no accident that he's had an excellent year. I mean, Spartan fans might want to will look at their schedule and say, who they played. And yes, but don't let their schedule fool you. What Denard Robinson is doing is special. He just did something that no other college quarterback has ever done. He did twice in the regular season. He went for over 200 yards passing and over 200 yards rushing in a single game. He's done that twice this year. No other college quarterback has ever done it. So don't fool, Spartan fans, don't fool yourself on thinking Denard Robinson isn't the real deal. He is the real deal. But the beauty of it is Michigan's defense. It's kind of like the Michigan State defense in the John L. days. They're Charmin soft. And they're just waiting for that huggable squeeze.
Love it.
And the Michigan State offense can give it to them. They can tear through that Michigan defense. Michigan State's going to be able to run the ball. They're going to be able to throw the ball. And Michigan's not going to be able to stop them. Now, the only tricky part is Michigan State's going into hostile territory for the first time. And we really don't know how this Michigan State team is going to react going on the road. They've done all of this at home. We have no idea how they're going to react on the road.
Wait a minute, Dad.
They've got a veteran quarterback starting his second year. I think it's going to be okay.
Sackmo. What about that hostile environment at Ford Field in front of the hometown Florida Atlantic crowd?
Come on, man.
I'm just saying.
Oh, my goodness. I see, that's not a hostile crowd.
That was a nice house guest.
Huh?
That was a nice house guest, actually, is what it was.
Yes, they were very nice. In fact, they were so nice when they had a chance to win the game. Howard Schellenberger decided to thank Michigan State for giving them a nice, big, fat payday and not try.
Oh, man. This is the first time I've officially lost it on the podcast. Oh, goodness gracious.
This Michigan State game is going to be interesting. Am I wrong? Is there any way both teams don't put up at least 30 points?
No, unless some sort of strange things happen, Satchwell.
I mean, this is just a bad matchup for the Michigan State defense. This is a team they don't match up well again. Now, I think the Michigan wide receivers still have something to show because, for the most part, Denard Robinson isn't throwing to wide-open receivers. And if the Michigan State DBs can stay close to the receivers and make those throws a little more difficult, then you got something. But you want to know what the other funny thing is? Do you remember when the Lions ran the run-and-shoot offense, the Barry Sanders era? You had Herman Moore on one side, Johnny Morton on the other. You had Rodney Peete throwing the ball and Eric Kramer throwing the ball, Barry Sanders running it. And this was great because you could tell that everyone hated this offense
because they said stupid stuff. Like, you want to know what? I think they're scoring too fast. Right? The Lions were putting up 37 points a game, and everyone was complaining about they were scoring too fast. And they're saying they're scoring too fast, and the Lions' defense is staying out in the field too long. People are starting to say the same thing about Michigan.
Right.
There was talk after this game about how the Michigan offense, it's a big play offense, and they're scoring so quickly that the defense doesn't get a chance to rest. What? There's no such thing as scoring too fast. No.
Well, you know what, Sachmo? It does remind me exactly of Michigan State during some of the John L. era, in that you did have an offense that was quick, and in Michigan State's case, mostly efficient. This offense with Denard Robinson is extremely efficient, and I think what makes it look faster is when your defense doesn't hold up its end of the bargain. And Michigan's got that problem right now.
Yes. Michigan has the same problem that Michigan State had during the John L. era. Their players on defense sucked. Now. Yeah, that's what it was. There's just one thing. John L. recruited all this great talent on offense, not as much talent on defense. Rich Rod has recruited all this great talent on offense, not as much talent on defense. Now, the Michigan talent is getting there. They're young. And they've got a couple more classes coming in, a better defensive talent, so it will get better. But the bottom line is it's young, inexperienced talent right now, and they're just not in a position to hold up their end of the bargain. And it's not because Michigan's offense is scoring too fast. Good grief. It's because the Michigan defense isn't very good. I never understood the Lions fans that didn't like the run-and-shoot offense. Never understood it. They would never criticize Chris Spielman, Jerry Ball, and Benny Blades. It was always the offense's fault for putting up 35 points instead of 42.
Yeah. When your offense puts up that many points, you've just got to, you know, the defense has got to, you know, pick up the slack.
Yes. I agree.
Yeah.
So this should be an interesting game. What's your early prediction, DB?
Oh, boy. Well, I'm never one to make predictions on any game, and this one's always weird to make predictions on because, you know, by and large, for the most part, and Spartan fans, you know, we're all going to have to suck up here for a second and realize this. I mean, Michigan, as a football program, has been, a little bit more dominant here, and I'm being careful with my words, not to offend Spartan Nation here. But, by and large, if you look back over the last 30 years or more, Michigan's been the favorite in this game, and they will be the favorite in this game Saturday, if for no other reason than they're ranked higher than Michigan State by a few ranking areas,
And they are the home team.
And they are the home team. And the home team, and no matter what, whether it's a rivalry or not, in general, the home team's going to have a especially in college and pro football, the home team's going to have a little bit more of an advantage. But having said that, and I pointed this out last night, if the Michigan State defense can find it within themselves to stop Denard Robinson a few times, we showed something yesterday in our offense against Wisconsin that Michigan traditionally had under Lloyd Carr, that maybe Michigan will have back again, but they don't quite have yet. And that's this superb running game that we have and this big offensive line that we have that has the ability to take time off the clock and do, as long as Michigan State doesn't start making errors on offense, has the ability to kind of control the game that way and keep Denard Robinson or limit him from being on the field for long periods of time. Also, one more thing, Sachmo, and I'm not going to say what I think it is because I – don't want any Wolverine Nation in here getting any ideas on the week of the game. But I think there's still one or two things that Michigan State has not shown in their offense yet that will be unveiled Saturday. A couple things that we haven't, a couple wrinkles that are going to be thrown in there. And that's what I'll So my early prediction or feeling about it right now is I don't want to guess scores, but I feel good about Michigan State's chances in this game Saturday. It's not going to be easy, but I feel good about it.
You're predicting trickeration. I like it. This is going to be a good game. These are in my mind, these are two evenly matched teams. I have that much respect for Michigan's offense. And Michigan's defense is as bad as Michigan State's defense. And Michigan State has a very good offense in their own right. These are actually two very good offenses going up against two defenses that have had issues. I think Michigan's issue is they're not a good defense. I think Michigan State's issue is that their defense just doesn't match up well against the spread offense. And so it's going to be interesting to see. I think whichever defense steps up to the task, whichever defense finds that intestinal fortitude and finds a way to stop the other team, that's going to be the team that wins. It's going to be a fun game. It's going to be a fun game. It's going to be rooting hard for Michigan State to make it three in a row against the lads from Ann Arbor. That's for sure. All right, before we go to we're going to go to the rest of Big Ten, we're going to leave on this. Exit on this note. I want to thank Don Treadwell for not calling a jump pass a la Urban Meyer on fourth and goal there at the end of the game. Okay. on to the Big Ten, rest of the Big Ten slate. We'll go over the games. We'll go over each score, and then we might spend some time in each game. We might not. We'll see. Northwestern, Minnesota. Northwestern won 29-28 in Minnesota. It was a back-and-forth game. That's the best I can say. It was Northwestern, Minnesota. And,
Minnesota, Sachmo, could be the unfortunate doorman in the Big Ten this year. They've had a tough time.
Yes, they have. Ohio State 24, Illinois 13. Terrell Pryor got hurt early in this game. He did come back. It was a leg injury. He had a tough time pushing off the thigh after he came back. But the defense was more than enough to hold off Illinois. And that seat under Ron Zook, is the flame must be getting turned up there, baby.
Hey, you know, Satchmo, though, Illinois gave Ohio State a bit of a scare for a while, though. I mean, give them a little bit of credit. That was not an easy win for Ohio State.
No, it was not an easy win, but the Fighting Zookers are down to their last Zook, I think. Michigan 42, Indiana 35. And now, this is what we were talking about before. Two spread offenses actually playing each other. And this came down to the last second. And by the way, give the Indiana coach credit. Going for it on fourth and goal to end the first half with 1 second left in the first half, they score a touchdown. That took some courage. Michigan found a way to win it. After Indiana tied it with about 1:10 left, Denard Robinson led his team right down the field, ran it once, threw it once, and then ran it in again. That's all it took, 42-35 Michigan. I was impressed by the Michigan answer there, DB. How about you?
Yeah, and Robinson shows, much like Cousins, you know, he's learning to kind of manage a game. And what I was impressed with Robinson more with yesterday was his arm looked pretty good yesterday. And we haven't thought that about him in the first few games, but he made a big pass down the field to get Michigan within striking distance. And at that point, they really only needed a field goal. But this Michigan offense is, with Denard Robinson in there, so talented that, they're so forceful that they can do the job without having to have that field goal.
Yeah, no, you know, he definitely has a lively arm that's getting more accurate. And he's getting better at picking his receivers downfield. And it's going to be interesting to see how he develops this year. Can you imagine that they didn't know who their starting quarterback was going into the season? And, you know, he barely won the battle. I mean, he looks like such a natural back there. All right. Then
The last Big Ten game of the slate was Iowa 24, Penn State 3. And I know Penn State got a drubbing. Iowa had a late interception to solve this game away. But I'm going to throw this one out there, DB. I think Penn State has the best defense in the Big Ten.
Wow. That's an interesting...
Look at what they did to Alabama.
Yeah.
They control... I mean, Alabama, it was this sort of game. It was a 31-3 game. But you want to know what? Alabama didn't put it away until late. And the Penn State defense hung in there against a very good Alabama team. And against Iowa couldn't put it away. Penn State had it inside the Iowa 5-yard line two or three times. It only ended up with 3 points.
Yeah.
This Penn State defense is really good. And I think it might be the best in the league. They've got an offense to go with their D. They can win some games.
Yeah, their offense is young right now. I mean, this quarterback they have, Robert Bolden, I mean, that's one of the reasons why. I mean, he's learning on the job, and that may be holding them back a little bit. But, yeah, Iowa had to earn every one of those 24 points last night. I mean, it was tough. I can see what you're saying about Penn State. I mean, I hadn't really – we haven't discussed who might be the best defense in the Big Ten yet, but you may be making a strong argument there for Penn State. I agree.
Yeah, I mean, they went on the road to Iowa, which is, as you know, a tough place to play in. And until their quarterback, their freshman quarterback, threw that late pick, and that was a pick six. I mean, it was returned for a touchdown. Iowa couldn't figure out a way to put this game away. I mean, Penn State just kept hanging around. And I'm not going to put it just in the quarterback's hands, though. Penn State hasn't been able to generate a running game either. And part of it is Evan Royster doesn't look like the Evan Royster we saw last year. He came in, apparently he bulked up, and the coaches weren't happy with the way he bulked up, and now he's shedding the weight, and he doesn't look explosive. The offensive line doesn't look like it's opening these huge gaping holes for him. And I think part of the offensive problems at Penn State is that the offensive line and the running game are really letting down a quarterback that needs help right now. We'll see what happens. It's interesting times in Happy Valley. I will say the one last thing about Penn State. At the end of the first half, they looked disorganized. They got the ball down to the Iowa 3 or 4 yard line with about 5 or 6 seconds left in the game. It looked like they had no idea what they were doing there at the end, and ended up kicking a field goal. It was time management that it looked like it was the John L. Smith era all over again. just awful time management.
That's maybe he's the special teams coach also for the Nittany Lions.
when they interviewed Joe Pa going into the first half, I was half waiting for him to go, the coaches are losing the game for them.
Oh, boy. Not one of the fonder moments of Michigan State football history.
No, not one of the prouder moments of Michigan State football history, that is for sure. All right, let's turn to a top 25 action from last week. Alabama took it to Florida in a big way, and I'm waiting for my screen to refresh to bring up the score here. 31-6, thank you, DB.
Yeah.
It was a pounding. I mean, it was a manhandling. I mean, Nick Saban looked like he just bent Urban Meyer over and spanked him. it was between Mark Ingram and Trent Richardson. They just turned around and ran the ball right down their throats. And
yeah.
Florida didn't have any answer for it.
No. Much like, Florida has a similar problem right now to Penn State. They've got a young quarterback, and he's got big shoes to fill there without Tebow. And they're going to, their record's not that bad, but the Gators are going to take their lumps this year.
All right. Yes, the Gators are going to take their lumps. Best game of the night was Oregon versus Stanford. Oregon ended up winning 52-31, but this game was a lot closer.
than the scoreboard suggested. I mean, it was a lot closer than the scoreboard suggested. This game was tied at 31 at one point, but Stanford raced out to an early lead, 21-3, I believe. And then Oregon scored a touchdown and then kicked an onside kick. How cool is that? I'm surprised more teams don't do it. They recovered the onside kick and went down and scored again. All of a sudden, it went from a 21-3 game and a 21-17 game. Now, I'm a fan of the onside kick, DB. Onside kicks work when the other team isn't expecting it. I would love to see it more in college football. I think it could be a really effective weapon in college football.
Yeah.
Do you want to see it more? And two, why do you think we don't see the onside kick more in college football?
That's a good question, Sajmo. I don't know. I don't have an answer for it immediately other than, it's a risky play. If you don't practice it all the time, it's a risky play. It's like bunting in baseball. If you don't practice that all the time, the risk is greater than the reward there, I think.
I agree with you that it's a risky play, but it always works better when it's an actual surprise. And it goes from then becomes a 50-50 proposition. But I've got a theory on why you don't see it that much. And my theory is college coaches, much like their NFL brethren, are a bunch of risk-averse pussies. And that's exactly what it is. Because the thing is, they know it's the right play to do it, but they don't want to have to kick that onside kick, see it fail, and have sports radio and the alumni just complaining the entire week about how stupid it was to try an onside kick. Just don't want to do it. And so they don't do it. But you want to know what? Chip Kelly had the cojones to do it, and I say good for you, Chip Kelly. No one was expecting it. That's why it worked. And I think especially in college football, where you're dealing with players who aren't always going – a lot of teams and a lot of players, if you do a surprise onside kick and they're not expecting it, you're going to get the ball back. That's just all there is to it. And
the Florida Gators
just went out and executed and good for them. Yes.
Yeah.
Oklahoma beat Texas. Mac Brown goes down. Nothing wrong with that. But the only other, there were two other top 25 games of note. One, because we couldn't figure out why it was on TV, and that was the Washington victory over USC,
32-31.
Seriously, who cares?
Yeah, ESPN. Go on your ESPN rant, Central.
Oh, okay. This was absolutely horrific. Here's what ABC ESPN did to us. Did they do this to you? I know they did this to me, DB.
Yeah, they did it to me, too.
Okay, here's what they did. On ABC, they had Boston College Notre Dame. Really? Who wants to watch Boston College Notre Dame? just no interest. Notre Dame just lost three straight games. Do we really want to see him playing an awful BC team in prime time? No. And you want to know what? Catholics, you all know it was a lousy football game. There wasn't a Catholic person out there, unless they actually liked Notre Dame, that was interested in this game. And they were watching other football games. That's just the way it is, all right? Then on ESPN, they had the Iowa-Penn State game. Then on ESPN2, they put Washington, USC, and high def.
Ooh.
And they put Oregon, Stanford, the best game of the night, two top 10 teams. They put them in standard definition. What? All right.
Yeah.
If you've got all sorts of contractual obligations, all that stuff, I get that. At least put Oregon, Stanford, and high def.
Yeah.
Don't stick it in standard definition. That's just pathetic. Or, move Washington, USC to, like, ESPNU or ESPN News or ESPN Classic or somewhere.
ESPN Deportes.
Yeah, ESPN Deportes. Yeah. What?
I mean, if you want to create a separate channel for it, that was just awful. That was just horrendous. And good for Washington. And Steve Sarkisian beating his former U.S. teammates.
Hey, I figured something else out. I think that there's a USC editor at the Washington Post because they didn't even include USC or their record in the standings today in the Post. The Pac-10 became the Pac-9 overnight.
That's hilarious. All right. And then we had the other game we're talking about is LSU-Tennessee. Yeah, LSU beat Tennessee 16-14. A pretty wild ending. Now, DB, you were the first to see this ending. Go ahead and recap the ending and then what you thought of it.
Well, real quick, because we got 5 minutes left. It was just crazy. Tennessee looked like they had LSU beat. They were up 14-7, I believe, 14-10, excuse me, and then had a goal line stand coming. Tennessee had trouble getting guys off the field and ended up with 13 on the field at a critical moment when LSU was going for it. And the clock went to zero, and because of the penalty, they redid the down, and LSU rushed into the end zone. And this was after Tennessee charged onto the field thinking they had won. Crazy.
Yeah, well, DB, do you know why Tennessee had 13 men on the field?
Why did Tennessee have 13 men on the field, Sedgman?
Because in Knoxville, they can't count past 11.
Hey-o.
Tennessee people, you know I love you. Pam Smith, you're not Smith anymore. Pam, whatever you are. If you're listening to this, you know we love you, but you also know it's true. You can't count past 11 in Knoxville. All right, we've got a couple minutes left in the show, and we'd like to touch on other Big Ten news besides college football. And one thing that's come up is that Penn State is now offering ice hockey as a varsity sport. That gives six Big Ten schools, makes six Big Ten schools offering hockey. So that puts in the question the future of both the CCHA and the WCHA. Now, DB, this is a subject near and dear to your heart. You track this closely. You interact with college hockey coaches. You interact with CCHA coaches. What's going on in terms of college hockey? Is there going to be a Big Ten hockey conference?
Really hard to say yet, Satchmo. I heard Rick Conley this week and Red Berenson this week on a CCHA coaches call previewing the season, and neither one was really sure yet that could happen. But it very well could happen. The Big Ten Network gets behind it. It will be interesting to see what happens to these leagues. The one strange vibe that I got out of it wasn't from a Big Ten team, though. It was from Northern Michigan. All of their non-conference games in Northern Michigan used to be in the WCHA, and then they flipped back to the CCHA. And all their non-conference games this year are against the WCHA. They said it's for geography, and that very well could be because they're way up there in Marquette. But it's interesting. I feel like I got this vibe from Walt Kyle, their coach, like, you know, maybe they're ready to jump back if something happens. I don't know. Who knows? I don't know if they know something or not, but right now it's hard to say. It's a big question mark.
Yeah, I got to admit, I would like to see it. I think it will be great programming for the Big Ten Network because, let's face it, people will watch college hockey on the Big Ten Network more than they're going to, say, watch gymnastics or track and field or anything like that. There are a lot of big hockey schools in the Big Ten. I mean, between Wisconsin, Minnesota, Penn State, Michigan State, Ohio State, it's hockey country. And I think it would be a lot of fun to do it. It would be even more fun if we could get more Big Ten schools to offer hockey. But I would like to see it. There's no doubt in my mind I'd like to see it. Would you like to see it, DB? Because, I mean, this would really change the college hockey landscape.
Yeah, I think it would be fun. I think it would be nice, though, if they still, you know, the CCHA was still able to continue their some of their rivalries, because you've got Miami University is a great program, and Notre Dame's in there, and Jeff Jackson's doing a good job. So, yeah, I'd be kind of melancholy about it because of the CCHA, but it would be interesting.
Yeah, another reason for Notre Dame to join the Big Ten. All right, that's all the time we have for this week. We will see you next week on Sparty Talk.